The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh.
You're in the madhouse now.
It can be hard to relate to a difficult person, and if you're in a relationship with one of them, it makes it even harder because you have a lot invested. Usually, you have a lot invested. So when that happens, what do you do? What's the solution? What if the difficulties never stop? That's why I created the Love and Abuse podcast over at loveandabuse.com. Welcome to the Overwhelmed Brain, where you'll learn to make decisions that are right for you so that you can create the life you want now. Hello, this is Paul Coliani, and I'm here to help you learn to deal with difficult people and tackle life's challenges without compromising who you are. This show consists of my personal opinions. It's meant for informational purposes only. Always seek a professional for your mental health and well-being. I have a full plate today. I'm going to try to get through everything that I have. I will probably not even be able to get through half of it, but we're just going to see what happens. This is more or less a relationship episode. It's about marriage and commitment, or not being married and being committed, or not being committed and being in a relationship and seeing what happens. I'm going to read you the first message, and then we'll just go from there and see what else other people have written to me as well. Kind of a grab bag of messages today, and see what happens. Now, if you're single, I've received messages before that say, "Hey, Paul, I'm single," and that episode didn't apply to me. That can happen, and I apologize that not every episode will apply to your situation. But I always see relationships, no matter what they are, romantic, platonic, business, no matter what they are, I see relationships as having many of the same qualities. Even the people that you meet at the supermarket, there are ways to relate to other people that are important to remember in all cases. It's sort of like when you're married, you treat your spouse differently than you treat the person in the supermarket. Just for example, most people will do that. Some people won't, but most people will treat their spouse, the people they care about, the people they love, the people they're closest to, and maybe not love, people that are in your life and you have a different bond, different connection with them. Why do we treat people outside of our relationship differently? My take on that is that we allow ourselves to be ourselves when we're around people that we know best. So when, even if we are around somebody that we don't like, or we do like, but we are not really getting along that well, we're still going to treat them differently than we treat other people because they know us better. They've known us longer than most people. Sometimes it doesn't happen that way, but people see through us when they get to know us. They see through certain things. And we can let our guard down in front of most people. So I'm kind of going here and there with that, but I wanted to share that. That's my take on why we act differently in front of other people. I mean, this is common knowledge. I'm not telling you anything you don't already know, but I want to start with that foundational philosophy that in our most intimate relationships, we let our guard down and we show them likely who we really are. And that can mean a lot of things to a lot of different people, because someone can be nice to the person in the supermarket and be really troublesome to the person at home. So that is just kind of a foundational thought that I have when I go into episodes like this where I talk about relationships. And we'll see if that applies when I read these messages. This first person wrote and said, I am currently separated from my husband of almost a decade. After many arguments and not ever seeing eye to eye with my unhappiness, my final plea was to suggest that we separate. I felt like I was out of options and I needed my husband to realize that I was needing more from him. I feel foolish. At the time, I felt that I was making the right choice by allowing us to take some time apart from each other, but it didn't take long for me to feel like that I made the biggest mistake. I hate that it had to come to this point for me to realize that things that bothered me were insignificant. I guess I was wondering if you have an episode that you can direct me to or help me through this process. Do you have any advice for mending a marriage or separation? Okay, thank you for sharing that. And we can make a mistake. We can say, I want to split up. I want a divorce. I want this and that. And then we realize, oh crap, maybe I shouldn't have done that. So here's my take on this. When you separate, when you break up, when you leave someone, there's a reason you did it. So first, there's a reason. Second, that reason wouldn't have changed unless you left. This is my take, my perspective, but it's true. The reasons you left, the reasons you broke up or got a divorce would not have changed had you not left, gotten a divorce, etc. I want you to keep that in mind because you don't know what you don't know until you do the thing that you believe you need to do. So in order to learn what you know now, you had to do the thing that you had to do. In other words, if you decided, maybe I should have stayed, maybe it was a mistake to do this, or it was definitely a mistake to do this, you can't necessarily have ever had that thought back then. You wouldn't have, because you weren't who you were back then. So it wasn't a mistake. It wasn't in error. It was because that's who you were back then, and to this person, you were unhappy. And when you're unhappy, you try to work things out with the other person. You try to get them to understand where you are. And if that doesn't work, you have to take the next right steps for you. There's no way you can go back in time and change what you said and change what you did, because you needed to go through this to learn what you know now. I know that doesn't help you feel better. I'm not saying it's supposed to. I'm saying that you didn't make a mistake. When you make that decision, it's not a mistake, because you were working off what you felt back then. You were working off what you knew, and you also tried. You tried to work things out. You tried to talk to the person, and it didn't go anywhere. So had you not left, you wouldn't have learned what you needed to learn. And after leaving, you have a different perspective because you left. So leaving was necessary to give you that perspective. You had to do it. That is something that I hope you can accept. You had to do it. There was no other way for you to get this perspective. So when you get to that point where you realize I had to do it, otherwise, and this is also true, my perspective, but I know it's true, is that if you stayed, nothing would have changed. How can you know that, Paul? Because you have to accept that's how it is, because that's how it was. It's the trend line that I talk about in relationships. The trend line of a relationship is like the trend line in a business. The trend line's either going up and you're getting profitable and it's continuing to rise and everything feels good, or it steadies out and you feel good in that rhythm. Goes, you know, there's ups and downs, or it goes down and it stays down. And so you look at the trend line. What happened yesterday will happen today and will happen tomorrow. That is the trend. So if you are in the relationship for many years, this person said almost a decade, how many of those years did the trend line go down and stay down, or go up and then stay down for a long time and then go up again and stay down for a long time? That doesn't change. That does not change. That's something, at least in my life, I've learned to accept. What happened yesterday will happen today and happen again tomorrow. What happened last week? What happened last year? If you haven't seen a change, it's not going to change. So you have to accept that this will be the way it is tomorrow. And sometimes relationships don't change unless you do. So sometimes you have to take a big step, a big scary step that changes the relationship in order for the relationship to change. Now I'll get to the question. The question is, do you have any episodes or advice for mending a marriage? Now, at this point, if you're separated, if you are broken up, and you want to get back together, you both have to want that, first of all. That's obvious, I know. But it's something you have to consider. Do you want it? Yes. Does the other person want it? We don't know. Unless you ask a question like, and I've heard this in movies, I've read this in books, a question like, do you still think about us? I think that's a perfectly valid question. It's not something that is pushed on them or you're trying to push on them. It's not like that at all. It's an open question. Do you still think about us? Do you think about us? Do you miss us? I think that's a good question. I think I would ask that question if I was thinking about the other person. The challenge with that question is you may not like the answer. So you have to go into a question like that being able to accept the answer either way. The good news is whatever the answer is, you can make your next decision based on that answer. If they say, well, no, I've been pretty happy, that might hurt, but you can at least move on. You get closure. If they say, yes, I do think about us, and I wish things didn't happen the way they did, or whatever they say, then a conversation might open up, and then you still get closure because now you know where they are. But you have to know where they are. You have to get to that point where you know where they are. You can't be in a bubble. So you do have to have a conversation like that, but you do have to be prepared for an answer that you may not like. And that's the challenge, right? You don't want to ask the question because you don't know if you like the answer, but you have to ask the question if you want reconciliation. So I don't really talk about this too much, about reconciling and fixing things. I do talk about how to heal in the relationship and how to work on the relationship. But, you know, it's funny. Let me just look really quick. I'm going to pause here. I'm going to look to see if I actually have any episodes on the steps to reconciliation. Be right back. Okay. What I found is that I really don't. I really don't have too many episodes, if any, on the steps it takes to reconcile and what to look for. I mean, I do have an episode called, where is it? Second Chances. How do you know if it's safe to take someone back into your life? And that may apply. That may actually apply very much to the person who wrote. If you go to theoverwhelmedbrain.com and you type in the word second chances in the search engine, you will find that episode, and maybe that will be something that really helps you through it. But I think I do need to come up with an episode on reconciling, the steps to reconciliation, and what to look for. I do have another episode. Let me go to my Love and Abuse podcast. Can you hear me typing? And in that podcast, one moment, I have one called Is Taking a Break Before Breaking Up the Final Blow to the Relationship? So that's over at loveandabuse.com, and you'll find that episode in the search field as well. Is Taking a Break Before Breaking Up the Final Blow to the Relationship? So that might be helpful to you as well. And I don't have any others. I don't have any other episodes that really talk about the reconciliation process, and I think I need to. Somewhere in my two podcasts, I need to have something like that. It's all part of life. Sometimes we reconcile. Sometimes we get back together. So that's a great point in this person's message. For now, I'll just answer the question, do you have any advice for mending a marriage and separation? So the first thing I said was, you know, ask that question. You got to find out where they are. And then once you get their answer, you get the closure you need to move on to the next decision that's right for you. You need to move on to the next phase of life, whether that's with them or without them. But it's my opinion that you need a definite answer, because they may say, I don't know, I'm not sure. And if they do, it's your choice to allow them to consider things and contemplate and think about things. And I think that's a nice thing to do. Allow them to just keep thinking about it. But you do have to put a deadline on it in your mind. You can say, okay, if they're not ready in a month, or if they're not ready to answer me or have an answer to that question in 2 months, then if they're still in the I don't know phase, then I need to move on. Again, might be hard to do, but you need closure. You need closure to move on. And sometimes you have to create that closure. Sometimes you have to put that closure out in front of you so that you can make the next best decision. So that's basically my advice for you. It doesn't really go into the specific steps to reconcile, but what else do you need to know? If they want to return to the relationship and you want to return to the relationship, and now you know if they want to return to the relationship or not, the next thing to do is to try it out. I will say this. There is one more thing. And actually, I shouldn't have left this out. This is important. The very next step after you decide that you want to reconcile is to test the emotional triggers you had before. I have a lot on my plate today. I didn't think about that earlier, but that is so important. You have to test the emotional triggers. So if you talking to your best friend gets them upset, that needs to be discussed before you get back into the relationship. Let's just say your best friend is somebody that they think you find attractive. If that caused an issue before in your relationship, you need to talk about it. You need to ask, so if I call my best friend, are you going to have a problem with it? I may not ask like that, but you're going to have conversation on the emotional triggers that got you to the separation in the first place. That's my final answer. That's my final thought on this, is that you ask, do you miss us? Do you think about us? Do you ever think about getting back together? You know, you have that kind of conversation, find out where they are. And then if you decide to reconnect, talk about those emotional triggers, bring them up, because I guarantee you, if you sweep them under the rug, they're going to come up. They're going to come up the same way they did before. So you have to have those hard conversations sometimes. So I'm going to go on to the next message. Thank you so much for sharing that. And yes, I probably will need to create a more detailed, a more specific episode on the steps to reconciliation. But I believe those are two or three very important points I made in that situation. Next person wrote, I broke up with my emotionally abusive ex. It felt super good once I knew that he suffered and he changed because one of his girlfriends shows him how he should have acted, and now they're in a situationship. I once asked him, would you do the same thing to her the way you did all of the abuse to me? His answer was, yes, I probably would. Then I asked, why? He said he felt the need to do that. And he said that he's going to waste that girl's time for 1 or 2 years because he feels bad if he leaves her. My question to you is, why is he like that? I feel he is a covert narcissist. All right, thank you for sharing that. And at least he's honest. I mean, if he is that way, if he knows that he's going to use this girl's time or waste that girl's time, at least you have honesty in that. Now, you asked the question, I feel like he is a covert narcissist. It's possible, but narcissists don't usually admit the behavior that they're going to do that makes them look bad. I don't see that too often. Unless they're so proud of the behavior and they feel like it makes them look like they're in power or in control, or, I mean, it's possible. So it is possible he's a covert or an overt narcissist, but it's unusual, that kind of response. Or maybe it's not. Maybe people are listening right now saying, no, that's not unusual, but it is possible. So I'm going to just leave that out there. Now, the question you asked is, why is he like that? Well, let me say this. If he's diagnosable, if he's a diagnosed narcissist, that's why he's like that. The personality disorder is what some experts, or a lot of experts, tend to agree on, which is you're born that way. I think that we're born in the way we're born, and we can probably change because of the way we can learn. Our brain has the capability of learning and changing, but some people aren't born with the empathy gene. And I'm just making that up. There's no empathy gene. Well, I don't think there is, but some people just aren't born with empathy, and if they don't have it, then they can turn into people like this. So I guess my question to you, if you were in front of me, would be, was he empathetic at all with anyone? Or did he just pretend to be empathetic? Because that's an important question. The empathy has to be there in order for someone to heal and learn and change and feel bad for how they treat you. And if it's not there, if that empathy is not there, then they can do something just like this. There's very little, if any, empathy in the sociopath or the psychopath. There's very little or no empathy in the narcissist. If empathy's gone, that's the kind of behavior you'll see. People don't usually admit to it. The person without empathy doesn't usually admit to this kind of behavior. Now, there could be another reason or many other reasons that he is this way. Maybe he hates women. Maybe he just has had so many problems with women. Maybe he has an issue with his mom, and ever since then, he just doesn't like females. So that could be it as well. And he feels like using them and wasting their time is no big deal to him because they all are terrible. And if that's the case, that could be where he is in his mind. It's terrible that somebody would generalize an entire gender and just say, well, I don't like them. But there are people that do that. They've had a bad time, or they've had many references in their life where it didn't work out, or they were mistreated, or things didn't go their way, and they feel like it's the other person's fault. So it happens. So that could be it as well. Now, emotionally abusive people, I talk about this in my Healed Being program, emotionally abusive people typically tend to believe they are 100% right anyway. So this can happen as well. Someone who is emotionally abusive usually believes that they're right about what they're doing, which is why they don't stop. So when somebody comes along and says, well, I'm going to waste that person's time because I believe I'm right about doing it, because that person isn't going to satisfy me anyway, and they're not really worth my time, and I know I'm right about that. Why do they know they're right? They have many reasons, I'm sure. But that's what happens. Emotionally abusive people believe they're right, which is why they keep doing what they're doing to people. And even when the people they claim to care about are crying and suffering, and they see that unhappiness, they see that upset, they still don't change. Because the emotionally abusive person believes all you have to do is do what I say and we'll be happy. So the person's crying and the emotionally abusive person says, you need to do this or we won't be happy. But the other person's not happy. So the emotionally abusive person believes that since the other person isn't doing what they want them to do, it's their fault. It's the other person's fault. And if it's their fault, then there's no reason to change the behavior. If I am emotionally abusive and you are my partner and you don't do what I want you to do, then it's your fault. That's how the scenario typically is. And so that could be what's happening here too. I feel really bad for the person that he's in a relationship with now and the people that he gets into relationships with in the future, but hopefully there's enough accountability for his behaviors where he realizes why he feels so lonely, because he keeps ruining what could be good relationships with his behaviors. Hopefully. If he has no empathy, then he's not going to really care. Someone who doesn't care, there's nothing you can do. That's really the bottom line. If they don't care, there's nothing you can do. If they don't care, then you kind of have to move on, unless you don't mind being with somebody who doesn't care. But that's usually not what happens. We usually want someone to care about us in some small way. But if they don't care, what's the point? I look at people like that. If that person doesn't care about me at all, I don't necessarily take them out of my life, but I don't really invest too much into the relationship. If they don't care about me to the point where they see me suffer or they cause me to suffer, then I'll remove them from my life, definitely. Just the way I operate. But it's not always easy to do that with people, certain people in your life. But that's where I go with that. And thanks for sharing that. I'm going to come back and I'm going to read you another one. I might be able to fit all of these in today. I've got like 4 of them. And we'll just see where we go when we come back and do the other 2. Be right back after this. While for years my fiancé would gently but firmly nudge me to find a solution to my restlessness because it was keeping us both awake. Then I tried Soul, and now she is much happier with me. This podcast is sponsored by Soul, a company that's become my nighttime hero. Co-founded by our brother-sister team who understand the struggle with sleeplessness and anxiety, Soul's Sleepy has been a revelation. I've joined over 6,000 customers who now fall asleep faster and wake up feeling actually refreshed. And it tastes delicious with flavors like blueberry lemonade, raspberry lemonade, and honey chamomile. But it's not just about sleep. Whether it's stress relief or pain relief you're after, Soul has you covered with or without CBD. I rave about them not just because their products are delicious, but because I can trust their quality. Every Soul batch is rigorously tested, ensuring it's free from the bad stuff and full of the good. It's all organically farmed in the USA, and yes, it's gluten-free, and my partner appreciates that. It's time to get the sleep you deserve. Head to getsoul.com/brain. Use the code BRAIN for 20% off your order. That's 20% off your order using the code BRAIN. One last time, getsoul.com/brain using the code BRAIN for 20% off. And as of this recording, it is December, and during the holidays, my family has a simple policy. It's less about the gifts and more about the time we spend together. So true. And there's one gift that I believe we should all consider giving ourselves, and that's the gift of self-care. Over the years of my life, that meant finding a space to talk about the relationship challenges that kept me up at night. This is where our other sponsor today, BetterHelp, comes in. I've always believed that talking things out is the first step toward healing and growth. And while I've navigated my own relationship hurdles, I've seen firsthand how beneficial it can be to have someone guide you through those tough conversations. BetterHelp offers that professional guidance entirely online and on your schedule. Therapy isn't just for major life traumas, it's also for those moments when you need to learn positive coping skills, set healthy boundaries, or simply be the best version of yourself. So in the season of giving, give yourself what you need with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/brain today and get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/brain. Welcome back. I'm going to get right into the next message I received. This is the marriage and relationship episode. This person wrote, "My husband and I have been together for 13 years and married for 7. We have one child together. I lost both of my parents in less than a year from the end of last year to this year. This has caused a huge lack of intimacy between my husband and I. He's become withdrawn and we've been fighting more. It first starts with his ability to complain constantly, but not do anything to improve his situation. Now it's him feeling anxiety and insecure because he feels I'm going to leave him. This causes him to be withdrawn, not affectionate, and nearly living like roommates. I've had in-depth conversations to move our relationship forward, but I'm tired of the emotional whiplash. I just want to keep trying, but at what point do I pull the plug and just stay a single gal, single mom for a while?" All right, that's the message, and I'm so sorry for your loss. Thank you for sharing that. That's very difficult. And it's strange to me to hear that your husband has now been disconnecting or distancing himself from you because of two people that were important to you that you lost. Now, I'm not saying that he wasn't close to them either. Maybe he was. Maybe they had a fantastic, very close relationship, which would have been great. But now he needs to be there for you. So that doesn't make sense to me. And we all grieve differently. And I'm not trying to point any fingers here or make any judgments, but it is unusual for you to have to experience such a major loss in your life and for him to disconnect from you as well. So that is a big mystery. And that would be my question. Why did you distance yourself from me when I needed you most? That's a great question. I needed you most. I needed your support. I needed you to be there for me. And you left. Why? He may have a legitimate answer. He may say, "I don't know how to support someone when someone dies, so I don't know what to do, so I disconnect." I'm not saying it's a really good answer. I'm just saying it might be a legitimate answer. But that might be where he is. He just doesn't know how to connect with somebody who has lost someone. But at what point do you reconnect? What point do you come back and say, hey, how are you now? Let's talk about this if you want. Or maybe he doesn't want to talk about it, but this is just something that you have to bring up. This is something that you do have to talk about. And if he has been distancing himself and now you're living like roommates, the question that I like to ask is, what's wrong? And when he says, or anybody listening, whenever the other person says nothing, or what do you mean? You tell them, ever since X happened, you've changed, or you've distanced yourself, or you've stopped doing XYZ. What's wrong? And if they continue saying, I don't know what you're talking about, or nothing's wrong, this is where you might have to say, look, I know something's wrong. Ever since X happened, you have done XYZ. You got to be specific. In my life, it was like the first year of my relationship with my now fiance, Asha, and she disconnected emotionally. She did not want to look at me. She didn't want to kiss me when I walk in the door. And we had this challenge going on. And I had learned a lot about all the stupid things I did in my relationships. And I'm not saying she was stupid. I'm saying that I learned a lot about expressing yourself and being transparent and expressing even to the point where it may risk the relationship. That's how clear I got in myself that I was never going to go silent or sweep things under the rug. Like I said before, I want to talk about this stuff. I want to put it on the table. And so for, I don't know how long, was it a month or two? It was quite a long time. I hope it wasn't a month, but it went on a while. And I finally said, or I finally asked the question, what's going on? And she said, what do you mean? So I said, for weeks now, you haven't been looking at me. You haven't wanted to kiss me. You haven't wanted to connect with me. What's going on? I sort of verbally cornered her. I wanted her to answer because the way things were at the time couldn't continue. They couldn't continue because I felt left out. I felt unloved. I felt like I wasn't important. And if that's the way this is going to continue, then I don't want to be here. That's how I felt. I didn't want to be with somebody who was going to start acting this way, treating me this way. I didn't want to be with someone who didn't want to connect with me the way I wanted to connect with her. And so I brought it up and I knew it was risky because let's just say that she didn't like me anymore or she was falling out of love with me. I didn't want to wait and find out the answer. I wanted to know right away. I wanted to know so we could talk about it. Let's put it on the table and let's hash things out, whatever it is. And so I asked her, what's wrong? You've been like this for weeks now. And her first answer was nothing. And I said, I know something is wrong. You've not wanted to kiss me. I told you all this stuff. You don't want to kiss me. You don't want to hug me. You don't want to connect with me. You don't even look at me. What's going on? And she finally said, well, I don't want to get you upset. I said, I don't care. Make me upset. Get angry with me. Yell at me. Make me angry. Whatever it takes. But this can't continue the way it is because we're not connecting. We're not in the relationship that we should be in. So what's going on? And she finally said, well, I don't want to upset you, but if you really want to know. And then she told me. And I'm not going to tell you what she said, but it was important. And I didn't know it was important. She didn't even give me any clue why she was upset. She was upset about something I said or something I did. And it was a misunderstanding. And she said what she said. And I said, that's what it's about. Of course I will talk about that. Of course I want to fix that. Of course I don't want it to continue like this. Let's fix that. Let's change that. And I didn't understand. I thought we had an understanding like this, but what you're saying is we didn't. So we need to change that. We need to fix this. So it's hard to say without giving you the details, but the point was I opened the door for conversation because it had been shut and I was done. I was done with that disconnect. You have to get to a point where you're done with the disconnect. And you have to risk things to get the information out of somebody. Sometimes you have to risk a possible change in the relationship because they may not want to tell you what's really going on, but if you insist and you want to know, then you, like I said before, there may be information that you don't want to hear and it may change things, but you have to be ready to hear it. You may never be ready to hear what you don't want to hear, but you have to be in a position to bring it up so that it doesn't stick around. Because something that keeps you disconnected, if it sticks around, it doesn't go anywhere until you get to a pivotal moment like that. And that's when I, again, verbally cornered her and said, okay, you need to tell me what's going on because you're not like this or you weren't like this before. So tell me. And then she finally said, I didn't want to upset you and that's why I didn't tell you. And I said, thank you. After she told me, I said, thank you for telling me. Thank you so much. Now we can do something about it. And from that point on, it was great. It was great because everything changed. We were connecting again. And all we had to do was talk about it. And something like that happened again. She wanted to tell me something, didn't want to upset me. And she said, you know, you told me to tell you, even if it upset you. You told me to say something if something was on my mind and I didn't want to do it, but you said it was okay, so here it comes. And she finally spoke her mind. And again, it was a misunderstanding. I had a certain idea of how things were supposed to be or what we talked about, and she had another idea, and then we resolved it. How do you resolve things? I want her to be happy, and she wants me to be happy. A healthy relationship, that's what it looks like. I want her to be happy. She wants me to be happy. How do I support her happiness? She wants to support my happiness. She doesn't want to be selfish. I don't want to be selfish. So let's work on this together. That's what we did. We work things out. We work on things together. But you have to bring it up. You have to bring up the hard stuff. And I'm going to say it, you don't want to take nothing for an answer, meaning what's wrong? And they say nothing. When you know something's wrong, you might have to follow it up and say, I know it's not nothing. And then you just be serious. You say it with confidence. This is where I went. I said it with confidence. I know it's not nothing. You have been doing this for a while, and I know it's not nothing. So it is something. So say it. What's on your mind? Let's just have it out. Let's just put it on the table. If you're angry with me, tell me you're angry with me. If you don't like me anymore, tell me you don't like me anymore. Just tell me what's going on. That way you put it on the table, you talk about it, and hopefully you can resolve it. Or maybe you'll get information you don't want to hear. And usually when people have a problem with conflict, they'll never tell you. They'll never want to speak up and say, well, this is what you're doing and I don't like it and so-and-so. So they won't say it. People who have a problem with conflict don't typically want to express themselves. But this is why you have to give them a safe place to do it. What's wrong? Just tell me what's wrong. If it makes me upset, it makes me upset. But let's just talk about this. Otherwise, it's going to continue like this. And I know you can't be happy because I'm certainly not happy. I mean, I'm happy with you, but I'm not happy with the way things are going because we're not connecting. So that's why I think it's important just to bring it up and talk about it. So the person who wrote, I don't know if this is your solution, but this is what I come up with. If there are things going on and he's been disconnecting ever since your parents passed away, and maybe that was a coincidence that he just became more disconnected at that point, or maybe he's using that as an excuse to disconnect and there's something else going on inside of him. But boy, you kind of have to verbally corner somebody like that so that the situation doesn't continue as is. If it continues as is, it doesn't go anywhere. That trend line is just bottoming out. So you need to change the trend, even if that means the relationship goes in a direction you don't want it to go. But something has to give, something has to change. That's why I say you got to bring it up and just talk about it and get to the point where you are or they are expressing what's on their mind. Because if you don't, then it doesn't go anywhere. So that might have to be where you go. And you already said that, what do I do? Pull the plug? I would say that if he never wants to talk about it, then you might have to. You might have to pull the plug. You might have to say, well, if you don't want to talk about it and you don't tell me what's different or what's wrong, because we're not connecting, it's very clear. If you don't tell me, then I don't know how to fix this. I don't know how to help. If you don't want to express what's going on in your mind, or you think there's nothing wrong, then I don't want to continue going in this direction because we aren't connecting. We're like roommates. So I think it is time to pull the plug. So that might be something, a very hard conversation to have. It might be something you have to do. Thanks for sharing that. And I'm going to give you one more. Let's just go for gold. This is the last one. This person wrote, I love my husband of 25 years so much. I've been devoted and loyal always. Our marriage was bliss. 4 years ago, he falsely accused me of meeting up with a man. He won't listen to me. He is just right, and only his perception matters. He's hurt me so much. He's called me a liar, a cheater, a gaslighter. He mocks my feelings and dismisses my needs. He has been so mean. He's changed so much. He used to be sweet and loving, and now I'm punished and destroyed for no reason. I want to save this marriage, but there's no talking to him. It's only his perception that is allowed. I'm so sad and hurt. I don't know what to do anymore. That's a tough one. Thank you for sharing that. Sorry you're going through that. You know, I'm going to tell you the very first thing that comes to my mind, and you're probably not going to like it. Someone who changes that much, and they used to be sweet and loving and kind, but they suddenly just go 180 and they're just the opposite. That tells me that something they did or something that happened to them made them change to keep the focus off of them and put it back on you. I want to say this as respectfully as I can, and this is just my opinion, but when someone turns around, they change their behavior, and they've been a certain way, they've been kind and sweet the whole time, and then they become mean and pointing the finger and insulting and hurtful like that, my question is, what are they trying to protect? What are they trying to hide? What do they want to accomplish by doing this? Because I tell you right now, the way you just explained it is he wants to accomplish the following. He wants you to look at yourself and defend yourself so that he has to explain nothing. Now, I could be wrong. Maybe he really does believe that you met up with a guy or whatever. Maybe he really does believe that. If that's the case, then for this many years, he hasn't trusted you and he's been hurtful to you. All these years? That doesn't make any sense. Someone who doesn't trust you for all these years and mocks you and dismisses your needs, why are they still there? Why is somebody who doesn't trust you, doesn't believe you, still in a relationship with you? That to me doesn't make sense. I mean, I know why it happens. There are reasons this kind of thing happens, but that's my first question. That would be my first question to him. Why are you still here if you don't trust me? He might come up with some excuse, but that would be my question. Why are you still here if you don't trust me? That's one of those questions that you have to get an answer to that you may not like, but that's a good question. Why are you still here if you don't trust me? And secondly, I would stop defending yourself. If you are defending yourself, if you keep saying, no, that's not what happened. That's not what happened. That's not the truth. Stop doing it. If you meant what you said, it's not the truth, then that was your answer before. It doesn't need to be your answer over and over again, because what's playing out is a pattern that it seems to me he wants to continue playing out. Because if he has you on the defense, then there's no reason to explain why he's being so awful to you. This to me, I'm going to give you my opinion. I'm not saying it's true, but I've seen this a lot, is that when somebody puts that much energy into pointing the finger and making you feel bad and making you have to defend yourself over and over again and making you have to apologize, when that's happening, then they are trying to avoid having to answer to you. And that makes me believe that they are hiding something. I could be wrong. Again, I could be wrong, and I don't mean to paint a bad picture of what else might be going on here. But this is why I'm saying, stop defending yourself. Just say, well, if that's what you believe, that's on you, because I know what happened. You might have to go there. I would recommend you go there if, you know, you feel safe enough in the relationship, he's not violent or anything, but that's what you might have to do. Hey, if that's your belief, that's your belief. But I know what happened. I know it's true. If you choose not to believe me, then it's your choice to stay with me. Just matter of fact. What I'm doing is making him take responsibility for his decisions. He is deciding to stay with you, so now he has to take responsibility for that. If he decides to stay with you and continues to point the finger at you, then he's trying to put that responsibility on you to do something about it. And that could be what he's trying to do. Maybe he's trying to make you leave him for whatever reason. Why would he make you leave him? What's going on there? So that is a thought process that I have when I read your message. I hope I'm wrong. But to me, when I see this happening, when somebody gives you no breaks and they constantly point the finger at you and they make sure that you are always on the defense and you're apologizing and you're explaining what happened, your apologizing and your defensiveness needs to stop, because that's what they expect. It sounds like he expects you to be that way. And as long as you're that way, he doesn't have to talk. He doesn't have to express himself. He doesn't have to say what's on his mind. He just has to keep the focus on you so that he can do whatever he wants. And by doing that, by keeping the focus on you, it takes the focus off of him. So if he feels guilty about doing something, or he doesn't want you to find out about something, that's what can happen. They can put you as the center of attention, so there's no attention on them. Hopefully I'm wrong. Hopefully what it is that he has something else going on and he's afraid to tell you, but if you express it, maybe you can get past it. But it's been years. What's wrong? It's been years. Why are you still blaming me? That might be another conversation you have. Why are you still blaming me for this? If you really think I did it, why are you still with me? I like the idea of saying, look, I'm done defending myself. I'm done apologizing. I meant what I said, and it was the truth. I mean, you're probably not apologizing because you didn't do anything wrong. According to your letter, you told me that, no, this didn't happen. So he's just wrong about it. So you may not be apologizing, or maybe you are, but no matter what, you need to stop whatever it is, because he is expecting that pattern from you. And when somebody does something to get a pattern from you, and it's a repetitive thing, what they're doing is continuing a cycle that they know works. So he's doing this because it works. What is it working for? What is it doing for him? I don't know. You don't know. But what it tells me is that he doesn't want that attention. He doesn't want the focus back on him. So he keeps it on you. That's why I say it's important to stop defending yourself. And if you're apologizing, stop apologizing and just let him know, I told you the truth and it's your choice to believe it or not. But I'm done defending myself. This is the truth. What that does is make him responsible for his decisions. Right now, he is deciding to stay with you, but he's blaming you because he can't accept whatever you're saying. To get out of that loop, you put it back on him, saying, I'm not going to defend myself anymore because it was the truth. So what's your next decision? What are you going to do about it? You don't have to say that, but that is basically what you're doing. This is where I am. I'm comfortable with the truth. If you don't believe me, that's your choice. So you are choosing not to believe me, and you are choosing to stay with somebody that you don't trust, that you don't believe. So what are you going to do now? Are you just going to continue complaining? Are you just going to continue pointing the finger at me? If he says yes, because I know you're a liar and all that, then again, you have to bring it back to him and tell him, if that's how you feel, then you shouldn't be with me. I know that I didn't do anything wrong. You believe I did. So you shouldn't be with somebody that you believe did something against you or betrayed you. That's really what it comes down to, unfortunately, is to make him face his own accusations against you. He will have to face his accusation against you when you say, I'm done defending myself. This is the truth, believe it or not. If he says I don't believe it, then it's still on him. Well, I'm sorry you don't believe it. That's just it's just something you'll have to deal with then. I know it's true. If you don't choose to believe me, then I don't know what you're doing here. Again, you're putting it back on him. All that attention and focus and energy that was coming toward you, if you were soaking that up and defending yourself and being in that space, that's what he wanted. So I know this isn't good news, or maybe it is. Maybe it's helping you understand that this is the way out. But this is what needs to happen. This has gone on way too long. It can't go on any further. It has to stop. So you can either continue the direction that you're going, reacting the same way you always react when he does this, or you can change the pattern. And that's what needs to happen, I think. You need to change the pattern. If you don't change the pattern, then nothing will change. That's my probably hard to follow advice for you, but it's very important that you do that if you want this to change, because it sounds like he's not going to do any changing. And so you need to remind him that it's his responsibility and his decisions that are causing him to feel angry and causing him to continue to be miserable. He is deciding to do that because he is staying with somebody that he doesn't trust, according to him. So this is why it's important to make sure that he understands that you're done talking about this. And if he chooses to continue complaining about it, it's on him. It's on him because you know the truth. And there's not enough time in life to stick around people that don't trust you. If they don't trust you, then what are you doing together? There's not enough time in this lifetime to be with people who don't trust you. So if he doesn't trust you, then he can make another decision. And of course, you can make another decision. That may be what he wants you to do. Maybe he wants you to say, well, I'm not going to be in this relationship anymore. Then he can point the finger at you and say, aha, you're leaving because it did happen. Maybe he wants that. Either way, someone has to change in order for this situation to change. That change is not going to come from him. He's not going to stop complaining. It's clear. It's been years, so it's not going to come from him, which means it needs to come from you. Your reactions need to change. Your responses, your answers, you defending yourself, that all has to change. So it's not easy. I know this is not easy, but it might be the only thing that makes things different. And yeah, it may end up with you not being together anymore, and I'm sorry. But if he's got something else going on in his life, if he's trying to keep the focus on you so you don't see what he's doing in his world over there, that might be what needs to happen next. And I'm not trying to paint a grim picture. Sometimes this works out for the better. Maybe he doesn't really trust you. Maybe he doesn't believe you, but it still comes back to him. He still needs to make a decision on what he wants to do with his life. Thank you so much for sharing that. And thanks to everyone that wrote. I wish you all the best. I appreciate you tuning into this relationship episode, and good luck with everything. Stay strong. And thanks for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I'm going to thank the patrons of the week. These are the financial backers of the show: Paige, Harriet, Anna, Mary, Stephen. Love you guys. Thank you so much for supporting the show. I am grateful for all of you. If you find value in the show like these patrons do, you can head over to moretob.com, and there are ways to give back. Thank you so much, patrons. I am very grateful. And for more relationship stuff, head over to loveandabuse.com. That is my other podcast that tells you how to deal with difficult relationships, and especially controlling, manipulative, and emotionally abusive people. That's over at Love and Abuse. And if you know you're the difficult one in the relationship, I have help for you. Go to healedbeing.com. First 4 lessons are free. It's a comprehensive program that takes you through healing and changing your behavior if you are being hurtful to those you care about. That's over at healedbeing.com. And finally, thanks to Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And for my final thoughts, just real quick, if you didn't already notice a theme in this episode, I mean, besides the relationship stuff, but dealing with the relationship stuff, it almost always involves talking about hard truths. I hear from people over and over again saying, I'm not sure where they are and I can't figure out what they want. And do they still like me? Do they still love me? I hear that a lot. These are all valid questions. I've asked them in my relationships for a long time. I've since learned that the fastest way to find out what somebody feels or what somebody thinks is to ask them directly. I learned this in my first long-term relationship when I was really young, and it was like the very last 2 years of our relationship where we were completely emotionally and physically disconnected. Talk about living like roommates. That was us. And it took me, I was the people pleaser, I was the conflict avoider, and it took me, it took a long time for me to finally conjure up the courage to ask the question, what's wrong? What's going on? And then when I got the answer of nothing, I had to ask the harder question, do you still love me? That was so hard. But then she said yes. I thought, oh, well, that's interesting. And then I decided to go even further because something was still wrong. So I asked the deeper question, are you still in love with me? And she answered. And that was the answer that changed everything. That was the end of the relationship. So it's hard to ask those questions knowing you could get an answer that you don't like and you don't want. But imagine if I never asked. What if neither one of us talked about it? What if neither one of us brought up the hard stuff? Those hard truths that you may not want to know about. I don't stick my head in the sand anymore. If I notice something, and my fiance can attest to this, if I notice something going on in our relationship, something strange, some sort of disconnect, some sort of difference that doesn't feel very good and doesn't feel right, I'm going to ask, what's going on? What's going on with you? Doesn't mean I bother her every 5 minutes. It just means, you know, I mean, we all have our mood swings. We all go through our periods of ups and downs. So that makes sense. I'm not going to bother her every time she's down. I'm going to be there for her. I'm going to allow her to be in her space while I am ready to talk to her when she's ready to talk to me. I still allow those times. I mean, it's not up to me to allow them. I'm just saying I give her the space she needs. And that has shown her that it's okay to have down times. It's okay to be unhappy sometimes because the relationship bounces back. And when it bounces back, then everything's normal and we're just going through our own stuff. But we're pretty honest with each other. We're very transparent. If something's going on or if she has some sort of issue with me, she has no problem bringing it up now. She will express what's going on. She might say, why did you say that to me? That was very disrespectful. Hey, I would rather hear that, even though it doesn't feel very good to hear that, because I probably didn't mean to be disrespectful, but I would rather hear that than nothing. I would rather hear that than go weeks or months with a weird emotional disconnect or no intimacy or anything like that. I would rather have the truth, even if it hurts, than to live under a rock and feel completely alone in the relationship. That may not be for everyone. I'm not telling you this is the way you need to be. I'm just telling you if things are going on that make you feel uncomfortable, that you know aren't right, it might be time to bring up those hard questions and get answers. And if you can't get answers, you might have to lovingly push further. I know something's wrong because XYZ, this has been happening. I know something's going on. This isn't how you've always been. You've changed. What's going on? They may say, I haven't changed. You've changed. Okay, that's fine. If they bring it back, you can say, okay, well, how have I changed? Let's talk about this because I notice changes in you. This is a strategy, a communication strategy. Somebody points the finger back at you after you told them what you're experiencing or observing in them. they point the finger back at you and say, well, you're the one doing that, then you say, okay, you know what? That might be true. Let's talk about that. But I also want to know why you've changed too. And what you're doing is you're not defending yourself. You're not making it all about you or them. You're saying, okay, let's talk about both of these things. Because I notice these things about you and you notice these things about me. At least that's a conversation. It's not a conversation when one person is defending themselves or trying to explain what's going on all the time. It's a conversation when you can actually have a back and forth, an interaction. So if somebody points the finger back at you and says, no, it's you. It's you're the one who's changed. Then welcome it. Okay. You know what? You might be right. And I've noticed you changing too. So let's talk about this. Why have you changed? What's going on inside of you? Like maybe they're going to point the finger back at you and you can say, well, you tell me because I don't feel I have. But if you're noticing these things, let's talk about that. Again, you are making them responsible for their accusations. So it is important to bring up these hard conversations, knowing that they could lead to a result or a conclusion that may not be favorable. But at least you're getting somewhere. No matter what, always keep an open mind because that's how you step into your power so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are more powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.